And please just like for the love of God, I'm happy we're getting to do this again. Please just don't do what you did the last time.
What did I do the
when
last
we,
time?
When we went to go see Funny Girl, the way that we started the episode, the time I went to go see Funny Girl. What do you mean? You started the episode with a swift thwack to prove you were in the same room. We just don't need to do it again, okay? So, please, can we just start this episode properly?
Sure.
Fuck!
Hey, everybody.
Oh, God.
Welcome back.
I think it would have been better if I didn't say anything. That's on me.
Midnight. In our time. We're in the same room.
We're in the same room again. Someone let this happen again. I don't know who condoned this.
Really? What? We're playing that game.
It's an energy the energy of the two of us in the same room is something that the FDA has been trying to regulate for years now.
Well, and the FDA, as we learned last night at Danson, has said that too many musical comedies.
The FDA, the CDC, the HPV,
We're not talking about Danson.
It's a different, it's a whole different game. What we're talking about today, as you've read by the episode of this title, is the show we saw today. We saw Parade. And
we're not talking about Parade.
Why are we not talking about Parade?
We might talk about Parade in the future. We're not talking about Parade right now.
I don't know.
Parade let out before 11 p.m.
Well, we went to the matinee.
Yeah, but I can tell you that the evening performance let out before 11 p.m.
Folks, we're talking about the current Broadway revival of Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street. Such that it is.
We literally just walked in the door from seeing the revival, and we went to the last preview.
Preview, folks. This is going to come out when the embargo lifts.
Probably before the embargo lifts, because we don't get that info because we are the unauthorized critics circle.
We don't play by your goddamn rules. We cut up our equity card. We're on the front lines.
Did you get an equity card? You bought your way in. You were one of those people that bought their way in. I get it.
Well,
okay, let's
move on. No. I just lifted Patty's out of her purse from a performance of Company.
She's been lying this entire time?
Well, I mean, like, the equity card's caught up. It's just I did it.
Why would you do that to Patty LuPone?
I figured she didn't need it anymore.
You're the reason Annalee Ashford isn't Sweeney Todd right now.
Okay, whoa. I'm not comfortable with that jump in logic. That's actually rude. That's anti-Semitic, and it's been a big day for anti-Semitism today, so...
Leopold Stadt is tomorrow.
God. Yeah. As we continue our marathon of Jewish strife on Broadway.
You want to get into it?
Oh, no.
We're beating around the goddamn bush.
Sure.
You know what? I have a good way to frame this.
Yeah, well, we always start with our days. Like, how we...
I have something even better.
Okay.
The Metropolitan Opera.
Mother.
The Metropolitan Opera is constantly renovating contracts. It's not renegotiating. That's the word I'm looking for. I always find the right words eventually. Constantly renegotiating contracts. And the phrase always used, especially with the musicians, every time they try and cut the musicians' pay, is they say, "We are the best musicians in the world. We deserve this much." Mm-hmm. And as a result, they have a high average ticket price. And the highest ticket price at the Metropolitan Opera is $500. Mm-hmm. This current revival of Sweeney Todd, the average listed price is $400, but Ticketmaster does their Ticketmaster official scalping business with Ticketmaster resale.
I forgot this was Ticketmaster.
And they're going for up to $600. Mm-hmm. Now, they have matched, if not outpaced, the Metropolitan Opera in ticket prices. Was Josh Groban the best Sweeney Todd imaginable today?
Sorry, diplomatic answer coming.
I don't mean specifically him. Yep. I mean the entire world. You're putting on Sweeney Todd. You're saying you're charging these prices. Was he the best Sweeney Todd imaginable working today?
I was just trying to find a diplomatic answer in general. My answer would have to be no.
Is Annalee Ashford the best Mrs. Lovett imaginable today?
You know, Daniel, gonna be a second no from me.
Was the production the best production of Sweeney Todd imaginable?
Daniel, I'm not sure I would call it a production of Sweeney Todd.
So at its core, it cannot stand.
Yep. Except for the fact that it will. It will not, and it will not just stand, it will sprint, or as the tempo is indicated, maybe just make a slow, lethargic sort of trot.
Well, you're going to hear New York sounds, by the way, in the background.
Is this being edited?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well.
So we got to get through this in
an hour. Let's be snappy. Let's be snappy. Right. So, Dan, tell me about, how was your time at the theater? How was your time at the L'Enfantin?
I hate the L'Enfantin.
This is my first time being at the L'Enfantin. I don't know what would get me to go back.
It's my second time at the L'Enfantin. Yep.
And you want to
know what the first time was?
Was it, by any chance, the time you went to Tina Turner musical so that you could see Adrienne Warren?
Almost.
Oh.
You want to continue?
I wanted to let you pick up the ball there. I figured this is your story.
I figured you'd do it more concisely. She didn't show up.
Yeah,
I couldn't. So I was stuck seeing Tina, which, god awful, and she didn't even show up.
And Dan has so sincerely had a vendetta ever since. The L'Enfantin, Adrienne Warren, Tina Turner, everything.
Phyllida Lloyd.
Huh?
Phyllida Lloyd?
I don't know who that is.
She directed Tina, and she directed Mama Fucking Mia.
Mama Fucking Mia.
I don't like the L'Enfantin. It needs a renovation. It is, in a way, too big, but not terrible. The staff is hit or miss.
The staff is. I gotta let you know, listener. I was sat in the back row. These ushers, throughout the entire beginning of the first act, were sitting back there and chatting up a goddamn storm. I kept looking back at them during the show to go, "Are you fucking good? Are you for real?" And during the finale of the show, immediately after, spoiler alert, Mrs. Lovett gets her due, there's a large moment of silence, and from the back I hear a TikTok playing, and I look back and the usher is on their phone playing a video with sound on in a theater. I've never been so... I was close to shushing an usher. Mm-hmm. I was really close.
I would have said, oh god, I hate to be like Karen, but where's the house manager? Because that is... You're going to be on your phone at the back of the house where no one sees you, fine. Do not play a video with sound on. That is the height of unprofessionalism.
I have never...
I have to say, though, the usher in my section, couldn't have been happier with him. He was very nice. He was.
I saw him giving a little speech at the beginning of the show. He looked fun.
Everyone showed up on time. He thanked us for showing up on time and had us give ourselves a round of applause. He asked, "Who's seen Sweeney Todd before? Who's a fan of Sondheim?
Jesus Christ! He gave you a theme park.
Who's here because of Josh Groban?" And it was a nice conversation. He was acting like a human being, and he was engaging the customers.
Sorry, the person beside me at the beginning of the show had some very interesting comments. These were very clearly people who just were very unfamiliar with the theater. I remember hearing them at intermission going, "So I know 6 is Broadway. I know that it is Broadway." And I was like, "Yes, very good." And at the beginning of the show, they're just sort of looking through the program, and this guy beside me very earnestly says, So what is Josh Groban famous for?
What is Josh Groban famous for? This is a good question.
And the person beside him started going, "You raise me up," so and started actually singing the song. What a time on Broadway. It was a crazy audience altogether. I don't know if you
noticed. It was a crazy audience. They were, it had, not since Lea Michele and Funny Girl have I been in an audience that was that enthusiastic that we're at a rock concert. And
it was
also I've never been in an audience that was that enthusiastic about something that was
We'll get to it.
Disappointing to say the best.
We'll get to it. There was the little sting of music just before Little Priest. I suppose we could do that. Bing! And you just hear a person go, "Yeah."
Oh, the people sitting in front of me, I think they're Josh Groban fans, and they listen to a Sweeney Todd cast album, so they would know the music and know when he's coming up and like when to be excited about him. So they were like conducting with their entire bodies. And luckily, they were not directly in front of me. Otherwise, I would have had to say, please sit back in the seat. You're blocking my view.
I have to be honest. I was conducting at points during the show.
Yeah, but you were in the last row.
I was in the last row. I conduct when I sort of need to get technical about something. Just when I need to really just actually listen to something and really note that. And every single time a fucking lethargic-ass tempo came on, I'm like, okay, what are we doing? Like, where are we? What is our, like...
Let me be clear here. Do not conduct unless you were in the last row.
Sure.
Or standing room.
But I wasn't going, you know, full on Bugs Bunny at the orchestra. Just like a little keeping time with my hands.
Hand thing.
Yeah, yeah. Something. We're getting a lot.
They were full body conducting.
Okay, that's annoying. Yeah. That's annoying. That's mm-hmm. you're not a inflatable arm flailing tube man.
They seem to think they were.
Yeah. We're giving a lot away at the top. let's start with Sweeney. Let's start with Sweeney. Your history with Sweeney? I know you have a Sweeney story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was my first Sondheim because I bought the Patti LuPone, mm-hmm. John Doyle cast recording. Because at the time, and I've said this before, but at the time, the full original Broadway cast album of Sweeney Todd was not available on CD. They only printed a highlights disc. It was out of print for a very long time. And then in about 2008, in the lead up to the movie, they added the full original Broadway cast album
that makes sense.
To iTunes.
Oh.
And then they printed a CD after it was on iTunes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. You would have thought it's like one of the more successful
albums. It was one of the first cast albums to be put on a CD, but it went out of print.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
Shortly after.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I always was interested in Sweeney Todd, but I never touched it, never, mm-hmm. because it's a highlights album. I deserve better than a highlights album. And because, you know, kids,
yeah.
you're into those Andrew Lloyd Webber things.
And no, please don't look me in the eyes when you say that.
And those are all, you know, they have highlights albums, and yeah. you're like, it's missing music.
Because that's all his shows have, highlights.
You can't say that to me. I saw Bad Cinderella last week.
Well, if it has anything, it has highlights. Anyhow, yeah, so Sweeney, you've been familiar? Have you seen it live before?
Oh, yeah. I saw the
Barrow Street.
Yeah. Barrow Street, yeah, down in the Village. I saw that twice.
Twice. Who were your Sweeneys?
I had Carolee Carmello and Hugh Pandolfo.
Carolee Carmello was Sweeney? God.
No, she was Lovett. But oh, okay. I had Carolee Carmello and Hugh Pandolfo, and I had Sally and Tripolette.
Mm.
And Tom Sesma.
Oh, Tom Sesma, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. I've seen Sweeney live. There was a production in Toronto. It was immersive. It was not immersive. It was a promenade production where they kept walking you around a space. It was done in a church that had a food kitchen downstairs, and I went to go see it, and it was and it was 3.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my introduction to Sweeney.
3.5 hours. My God, that's longer than what we went to tonight.
3.5 hours standing, mostly. A lot of walking.
Oh, Jesus. Who the fuck did this?
Toronto. The city cumulatively came together and did this.
Doug Ford did it while he was on a cocaine binge.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's Rob. Rob had the cocaine.
Oh.
Yeah. No, he had the crack.
Henry Ford?
Sure. Okay. We heard his name today.
We did.
It's another. We keep talking about fucking parade.
Because it's what was memorable.
The takeaway from this Sweeney review is go see parade. Anyway, that was my like first time seeing it. Ever since then, I watched the George Hearn Pro Shot.
Yeah.
Well, I had never seen it before. I waited to see it live before. Yeah.
Shunned!
And now I'm intimately familiar with all the timings of the original Broadway cast recording.
Mm-hmm.
It was my most listened to album by far in 2022. Of my top five most listened to songs, four of them were Sweeney.
Okay.
Number one was Pirelli's Miracle Elixir. I don't know whether to be proud of that or not.
No, you should not.
It tickles my brain so good, Daniel.
You're hopeless. Sometimes you're hopeless.
Do you wake every morning and shame at his bed to cover your pillow with covered with hair? Anyway.
It's triple the time.
What are you?
Triple the speed.
What are you, anti-Lackamore? Anyhow, that was my thing with Sweeney. I now know it, like, to the depths of my soul.
You won't break my soul.
Well, I tried. Let's talk about Sweeney the musical. Let's just talk about Sweeney Todd.
Oh, yeah. It's perfect. I think the interesting conversation with Sweeney Todd, Jason Robert Brown. this is something.
We can't keep getting away with this.
Jason Robert Brown tweeted out, it was a Sweeney Todd anniversary, and I think it was during the pandemic. Sure. He said, "Happy anniversary to Sweeney Todd, the biggest artistic accomplishment of the 20th century."
Perhaps.
The question I have, is Sweeney Todd Sondheim's best work?
It's a very interesting question. I don't know. I think his best is Follies, maybe. Or maybe Sunday. I want to say that's in my opinion, his best work. I think Sweeney Todd is a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is an absolute, unremittent masterpiece. There are little, I don't know, things here or there that I think aren't the absolute most effective things in their moment. The Parlor Songs takes a lot of work to be done right, and I'll say this off the top, this production actually solved a problem there for me, so like credit to that, sort of made Parlor Songs more than it used to be.
I did something.
Wig maker sequence sometimes lags a bit. It's these tiny little moments that are sort of like yeah, they're necessary here, they all destroy it, but you're sort of like, whatever, they'll come and go.
Yeah, so for me, Sondheim, the overall best Sondheim show is Little Night Music. His best score is Passion.
Sure.
And then if I get asked the best Sondheim musical, which means for my addled brain, is separate from his best musical and his best score. The best Sondheim musical for me is Sunday in the Park with George.
I get what you mean. No, I get exactly what you mean.
Yeah. The reason I would not say Sweeney Todd, by nature, has a lot of filler in Act 2.
I mean, those moments that I brought up, both of them are in Act 2.
Those moments that you brought up. And honestly, by the sea, you could cut it.
Mm-hmm.
It would have consequences, but you could do the show without it. No one wants to, and no one would want to see it without it. But you could. Most of Act 2 is tension building until you get to the final half hour where boom, plop, 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 we get through it.
Yeah.
And his other shows, I feel, don't have filler. This needs to have filler. I do think it is a masterpiece. I don't really think anything is wrong with it. But in a conversation of best,
Here's the thing, though. I think the reason that that's there is also incredibly crucial, not just for like, oh yeah, sure, this informs the story, whatever. He's been extraordinarily open about the fact that Sweeney Todd is a melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
It is an operetta based on a British pulp story, right? And they are these huge, caricaturistic, larger-than-life...
It's not an operetta, it's an opera.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a full-out opera, and I don't think he would like it being called an opera, but he
called it an operetta himself.
The scale that it's on and the amount of score and the terms he's writing on, that's grand opera. And when I hear the word operetta, I think something differently.
I only say that because like he's called it an operetta himself. He's referred to it as an operetta. I think that mostly has to do sort of with the Britishness of it, maybe. And the fact that it is this, like...
The Britishness, I get. Yeah. And the fact that there is so much dialogue.
Yeah. And he's been, like, very open about the fact of, like, these are not real people.
They're symbols, they're ideas.
This is impressionistic. This is to get this tone, this emotion across.
The problem then becomes they are impressionistic and they are symbols, but they have to be played by the actors as full human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They need to be given a Yeah. They need to be given like a passion and an intensity, and mostly just gotta scare you out of your fucking seats.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bulk of it. You gotta get to understand them and fear them. The thing that I think is the most excellent about Sweeney Todd is the sense of dread. Mm-hmm. The sense of discomfort and of fear that it can stoke within you. And that sense discomfort. Of actual...
Absolutely.
The first time I ever saw a clip of the Halprin staging of Sweeney was when I saw a clip of Len Carreyrou doing Epiphany. And I watched it on a streetcar on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment of, boom, all right, you, sir, how about a shave? His body snaps to face the audience. And it's a sudden, sharp stab. And then he sprints down the stairs and lunges toward the audience. And I flinched.
Sorry, I have to say that right now. Josh Groban slaunters down the stairs in that moment, taking his time. I can't topple over. I have to be careful. Let's use the railing. Oh.
Watching that video on my phone, I flinched.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the fucking intensity. Boom, 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 boom.
He jumps
boom.
Down those stairs.
Yeah, he jumps. He sprints. He lunges at you. You think, oh my god, he's gonna fucking get me. Yeah. He's gonna jump off the stage and slit my throat.
Mm-hmm.
That is what's great about Sweeney Todd, is that it is constructed in such a way that that entire first act just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. I'll get fucking sort of interweavy right now for a second, but you have that motif that appears throughout so much of the show. Happens in Barber and His Wife. It pops up in Wait. It mm-hmm. pops up in, I believe, A Little Priest. Not A Little Priest. It pops up in Pretty Woman for a little bit, I think. Yeah, but all that to say, Epiphany comes around, and you start again with that. And the second that Sweeney snaps, we are hit with the fucking double time. And the effect that that has, after hearing that motif over the entire evening, all of a sudden being throttled into this, you are given a very clear emotional window into Sweeney's insanity. You hear the snap. You feel that, like, that complete shift in tone happen right then. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most thrilling feelings I've ever experienced in musical theater. That's one of my favorite sort of musical theater moments, period. That's snapping to that.
It's thrilling. It should be discomforting.
Mm-hmm.
It should be disquieting. It should keep you on your toes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, truly a name that is given its fair dues, but is given nowhere near the recognition it should when it comes to this musical is Hugh Wheeler.
Well, Sondheim famously started writing the show himself. He said he got to about Joanna and the show was over an hour long. And he said, I can't keep this up, because he was originally going to write the book himself. He said, I can't keep this up
mm-hmm.
because we'll never get home and I need someone to hold me to task and say we need to cut this.
Yeah. And Hugh Wheeler is not only an excellent dramatist, but he's extraordinary at tone.
Mm-hmm.
He is excellent at tone. And you can tell, like, I feel his stamp sort of all over the way that the Mrs. Lovett character builds up mm-hmm. and the way that you plant these kind of seeds of insanity and of these plans that she's been foibling since the beginning and the sort of, like, evil mastermindness of her.
Mm-hmm.
That's all Hugh Wheeler. And he constructs these characters in such a fucking magnificent way that I very specifically wanted to take a moment here to acknowledge. Hugh Wheeler's a fucking gift to musical theater.
Oh, he's terrific, and the reason why A Little Night Music, I've said it before, the reason why I say A Little Night Music is his best overall musical is because, for once, the book is every bit as good as the score. And that's Hugh Wheeler.
Yeah, it absolutely is Hugh Wheeler.
So, Sweeney Todd, fantastic musical.
Never in question. Never in question.
Not in question tonight.
No.
Not in question tonight. Let's get into it.
I actually don't completely agree with you that it was not in question tonight. And I think maybe we'll expand upon that a little bit later. But I think if this was my first time seeing Sweeney Todd, I would not have walked out of that saying anything close to, this could be a perfect musical. Anything close. I'll go into why.
I say it because the production that we just saw,
mm-hmm.
the current revival of Sweeney Todd, selling tickets at exorbitant prices, starring Josh Groban and Annaleigh Ashford, It is not painful to sit through. It is just constantly disappointing. It is not painful to sit through because Sweeney Todd is a good show.
Sure, sure. I'm going to be open and say that...
You were in pain.
On more than one occasion, I buried my face into my hands.
And you do have those moments. But overall, hear the music... You see the machinations of the show, they're very clouded, but you see the machinations working, and it's nice to see Sweeney Todd in general in a very oblique way. When you sure. get to specifics of it's this production, and these were the choices that, yeah, we'll say they were made.
There were choices made. Yeah. That's more than I've been able to say about Thomas Kail in general at this point. So it's nice to say that there have been choices.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, okay.
This was the worst directed production of a Broadway musical I've ever seen. Bar none.
I thought for a second when you said, do you want to start, you were saying, like, do you want to start?
I thought
those are very funny. Do you want to start? Okay. If we need to...
I really hate to say it. It is the worst directed production of a Broadway musical I have ever seen in my life.
For me, it is not the worst directed. It is far and away the most underdirected. And it has the big Tommy Kail syndrome, where you look at those things and you go, was he in the room for this?
That's what I mean.
You look at those performances.
I can't point to a goddamn thing he did.
I can point to a couple things he did here. I can point to the sort of usage of the pit. I can point to the stage image, a couple of stage images he created with the choreographer and in these little blocking lighting moments. I can reconcile some of that. It's just when you have these scenes and each scene is a different, like each scene people are completely in a different universe. Everyone's in a different musical. Sure, whatever. But every scene is also completely unrelated to the scene before it tonally.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's no through line here. There's no consistency. It's just one scene happens, and then one scene happens, and then one scene happens, and then one
Absolutely.
Scene happens. And it's really annoying. It's really annoying to get a production of a musical ever that doesn't feel like it has any kind of consistency, that it doesn't have any kind
of
through line.
It didn't have anything to say.
Yeah, it really didn't. It was just them doing the text. And
not
hitting.
Even, because...
No, they changed.
We'll get to it.
I don't know if you noticed, Josh Groban fucked up a line at the end with the...
Yeah.
What are you doing, woman? She's only a lunatic beggar. Yeah.
They paraphrased several lines in
there
the show.
There are a couple things here, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he fucked up the last lyric in the waltz.
Yeah.
He swapped around two of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep living it.
Didn't he?
Really living it. Just keep living it. He got those two the wrong order.
Didn't he flip a lyric in the Joanna reprise?
It's possible. I
thought he switched verses for some reason.
That's entirely possible. I always get confused with the Joanna reprise.
Yeah,
I never
yeah,
know what verse
yeah,
goes in
mm-hmm.
what order. So that's entirely possible.
I was just like, I think I'm hearing two different verses in this one verse.
But production.
I say worst directed, and yes, he did some things, but so much, there was no one watching, there was no one making decisions, there was no one reining the ham in.
What do you mean? Fucking Miss Piggy had nothing to do with this.
Hi!
It's uncalled for. Christ. I need you to know Dan actually just karate chopped me. Like, hurt a little bit.
Didn't hurt me.
Well, I'm sure. Boy. Anyhow.
I've talked a lot. Talk about this production.
Yeah, sure, I guess. The set was disappointing. The lighting.
What set?
Yeah. The lighting design had interesting moments. The sound mixing was poor, and the sound mixing was poor because of some of the faults of the music direction. The performances were inconsistent. The pacing was weird and all over the place. The tonal inconsistency was severe. all around, pretty say a pretty high quality production.
You didn't even get into the choreography.
Oh yeah, the impressions to choreography. Nor did I get into the Beggar Woman movement piece at the end of the.
Okay, yeah, let's get into a specific. You're going to do, like, not the full Beggar Woman song at the end, and what then to do there? My Joe, my Jing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did not do that. But they added this huge break where she's just looking around. Yeah. And it was that for like 2 minutes while she's looking around, she's doing nothing, and it's like, okay, I get it, but there's actual text we could be including here in the same amount of time.
There is. And
you didn't trust what was there? You had to create something?
They cut a few things. They cut the... I'm really upset about them cutting the Judge's Joanna, which I think is one of Sondheim's most brilliant songs. Not even
that was a Hal Prince decision to cut that, because he thought we're freaking out the audience enough, the Judge's Joanna is going to go too far to freak them out.
And that's a concern in 2023.
It's 2022. You're not going to be freaking people out at this point. That's the only reason it wasn't in the original production.
It's not 2022.
It's 2023.
There you go, that's what I've been saying. Time moves ever onward.
Time heals ever. Tuesday, Thursday.
Well, we should come back to that. We should come back to this show in 6 months and we'll love it. No, you can get me back in the fucking Lung Fontan. Anyhow, the question is, if the set design's a letdown, if the lighting design isn't a letdown, kind of nothing. If the music direction is a letdown, if the performances are a letdown, if the direction is a letdown.
If the choreography is baffling.
If the choreography is baffling, what is there? I gotta say, there's some pretty solid merch that they're selling, this production of Sweeney Todd. There's some very well-designed merch, and it's nice seeing like a reboom in the Broadway merch infrastructure. That Some Like It Hot merch was also absolutely gorgeous.
All right, enough about the merch.
I'm trying to be positive.
I know.
What do you want from me? I know. Let's
keep it chucking. Keep it
okay.
Moving on.
You know what?
Old Man River. Keeps rolling along.
That's next. Want to record it right after this? 2:45 in the morning. You want
to? Nope.
Yeah. Anyhow, let's talk about
some of the moments where there wasn't a director.
Okay. I was gonna say let's do things we liked. Yeah, let's talk about directorless moments.
So, Joanna, the number Joanna, and the Judge and the Beetle come in, and okay, friend, and he kills the bird. And Joanna spends 90% of the show stage right on the second level in, like, what looks like a solitary confinement cell, and she really has no room to move or make any action.
Yeah,
because
the lighting design fucking cuts her off before she gets to a fifth
level. Well, they go downstairs, and she goes downstairs, and they're all still stage right. Great. Why then, when we're at Ladies and Their Sensitivities, is the Judge walking home, and he's walking up the staircase that is now stage left? I felt like a fucking script editor, script supervisor, which really isn't a thing in theater. But my God, established that this home is stage right and only stage right. Why is he now stage left?
Why are you that absent that
you didn't even see that was a problem?
There was a recognition of like they're trying to be something of tension. Because he's standing on the stair and he keeps looking up and he keeps looking out. And it was like in that moment I realized, oh, this is such a fucking excellent opportunity to get the audience on the edge of their seat. Holy shit, he's about to walk in on them. And then that moment of release is like, oh my God, everything's going to plan. Oh wait, this is satisfying. Oh my God, he didn't end up barging in on them and he's about to go to his death. Oh, this is thrilling. And none of that was delivered because you didn't get that. It didn't ever feel like he was about to break in on them.
No, because he's on the other side of the stage where the house is not.
And immediately following that, infuriatingly, when they're doing the overlap for the Kiss Me and Ladies and Their Sensitivities, both of them are standing completely fucking still on the extreme stage right, one immediately above and one immediately below the other, standing there looking at each other or out to the audience and singing and doing nothing. I was actually really upset about this. I said, this is on Broadway? What are they doing? What a waste of fucking time. Like, I'm upset about that. They stood there. Listener, I need to stress. They stand and park and bark for 2 minutes because the tempo is... It takes a patter song and makes it into a fucking ballad. Like, it's such a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. And it turns it into one of the most boring sections of the evening, which is exactly why I say I wouldn't have thought this was a perfect musical, because I would have seen that segment and I would have gone, cut that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Cut that shit. Make it a 2 minute long scene.
And that is usually, for me, one of the most thrilling moments in all of Sweeney Todd.
I love Kiss Me from the bottom of my heart.
And part of what I was noticing there, more than anything else, was the absence of one of these singers. There's four people that should be singing, and God, you can't hear one of them. We'll get to him later.
They needed to take that song up a key. They needed to take it up a key. Would have been interesting. Anyhow. Can we talk... were there moments that you liked? Were there things that you liked here?
About the production?
Yeah.
I liked the oven.
I really liked the oven. I mentioned this to you before.
I liked how they rendered the oven.
This is
how she gets burned up at the end.
The burning up at the end was very nice.
Yeah.
I liked, in general, there's a very great moment. This is the one moment in this production of Sweeney Todd that I unequivocally loved. There's the moment in the Joanna Quartet where the beggar woman has her verse. And when the beggar woman has her verse, you see Mrs. Lovett stoking the oven. And the way it happens is that she opens the oven doors and there's this bright, heat intense orange light within it. And there's smoke.
Bright golden haze on the meadow.
Exactly. Very Oklahoma. And there's like a fog thing in there that constantly looks like it's steam coming out of the thing. And what it does is it creates... And Mrs. Lovett is not lit at all. It's just this oven and like the silhouette of her stoking. And I thought that was one of the most interesting visual pictures I've seen on a stage in a little while. I really, really, really enjoyed that. I saw that and I was like, oh, wow, that's very fucking striking. That was, for me, a moment that I really loved of aesthetic awareness and of something that actually set a tone.
Mm-hmm.
And something that actually had an opinion of the characters, right? Because you're seeing her as this sort of just like shadow puppet. Mm-hmm. And she's just like this monstrous figure stoking the fire. And you see sort of like the thing that the beggar woman fears. And I thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That was maybe the only moment I really felt like there was something to say here.
Well, let's talk about the other points of
sure.
the show and why I say who was leading in the room.
Yeah.
Music direction.
Alex Lacamoire.
I heard every single person except for Ruthie and Miles. I heard every single person in that cast sing at least one wrong note. And I don't mean like they were slightly flat. I mean they flat out intentionally sang the wrong note.
Yeah.
I heard missed orchestra entrances. They have a 26-piece orchestra, and that's their big selling point here.
Mm-hmm. Is it missed orchestra entrances, or is Alex
Well, he's not cueing them, is what it is.
No, but I'm saying, is it a deliberate thing, maybe?
No, it's not a deliberate thing, because you can clearly hear that some of them started, some of them are behind, they're not all together. There were several moments where they were falling apart at the beginnings or at specific moments of, oh yeah, that's a meter change. We needed that clearly cued.
Right.
They needed a vocal coach.
Yeah.
They needed a solid vocal coach for the entire cast.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were vocal inconsistencies. We will get this more with performances. I thought that every person made good sounds.
Yeah.
Except for one. I thought every person made good sounds. Why were they not told this is the right path.
Yeah.
This is what you should be sounding like throughout this entire score. And that's something a music director could do, even if the music director can't bring in a vocal teacher that can help the cast.
During one of the ballads, it was the ballad just after Pirelli's death. His hands were quick, his fingers strong. There's a trio that they have there. And there was one of the ensemble members who had a solo. And I went, yeah, that. Everyone should be following that. Mm-hmm. That's the direction. Mm-hmm. And even within that trio, all three of them were in different universes.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's going on?
And like, one of them in Act Two, I think it's right before Most Honorable Judge Turpin.
Most Honorable Judge Turpin.
I was so
the one before that, they fell to pieces. I mean, someone was absolutely.
So he waited too long before, but never again. He swore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Someone was completely in the wrong key. I don't know who. There's about five of them. One of them was flat out in the wrong key.
Most Honorable was a real letdown for me. It had no boom.
Well,
no
I mean, power. Because the problem is, there was maybe one bass on the entire stage.
Even one baritone.
Yeah, and he wasn't really a bass. He was a baritone.
Yeah. And like, I was messaging a friend at intermission who's like a very big music person. I wish I could even say, like, you know, that was what was exciting about this. They have these 26 musicians, but the thing is, there's such little use. You're the one who brought this to my attention. There's such little vocal power that as a result, the orchestra is being forced to be turned down so that they don't overpower
the
vocals.
This is sound design. The sound design has been, if you've looked online, it's been one of the more controversial elements. I did not think the sound design was bad. The orchestra is not being played for all it is worth.
Yeah,
I mean, it is not being mic'd for all it is worth. It is kind of not hard to hear them, but they are kept in the background. They're kept in the background because they have so many light voices that if you had the orchestra in your ears, you would not be able to hear any of those vocalists. I mean, you would be able to hear a couple of people here and there, but a majority of those vocalists, if they amplified the orchestra like they needed to amplify the orchestra, you would not hear them.
Mm-hmm.
The ear would not be able to handle.
But because we have just like a company full of tenors with low extensions.
Women too. I mean,
yeah,
they really cranked up Annalee Ashford's mic, but she's, again, she's someone who had some great vocal moments, but regularly is not singing well and regularly cannot handle the weight of the role. And you just wouldn't hear her if the orchestra was actually mic'd. I thought the sound design, considering they had to keep the orchestra low, I thought the sound design was great in that it was clear. You could hear all the lyrics.
It was clear. It just felt... It's the suppression of it that always
gets me. It's the suppression.
I hate my least favorite thing in musical theater. I like a sharp, pointy, direct noise. I like something that's shooting straight at me. I don't like when it sounds like it's coming through a filter or when it's coming through like a cloth or like a pillow, you know what I mean? When it has like, when it sounds like it's coming through muffled. I can't stand that.
You think, all these productions of Sweeney Todd, all these recordings of Sweeney Todd, you think of the wall of sound. Swing your hands wide. It's a wall of
sound. That's what I want with Epiphany.
Yeah. Never got there and just couldn't.
It's disappointing. It's really heartbreakingly disappointing.
The accent work.
I'm gonna say something. The original production of Sweeney Todd, the Sweeney, no matter who was playing the Sweeney never had a British accent. Yeah. Everyone had a British accent but the Sweeney. I love that choice. I fully love that choice. It sets him out as a sort of lone presence. It makes him feel more eerie and more ominous for being this stark, harsh American voice when everyone else has the sort of affect to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it seem more like this is the character. This is the one with the dark streak, with the evil, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did Josh Groban have an accent?
At moments, he had the tiniest shade of an accent. The issue is, Annalee Ashford is doing her Kinky Boots accent.
She's doing her Kinky Boots.
It's not anything new. It's the Kinky Boots accent.
To be honest, she's doing her Kinky Boots performance, largely.
We'll get to it, but she's doing the Kinky Boots accent, and it's so far out. And you think, wait a minute, she's living downstairs, he lived upstairs. I don't think Sweeney Todd ever had money. Shouldn't he then have the same accent that she has, and you only even notice it because what she's doing is so outsized. And then he's married to the beggar woman. I guess she could be from Scotland, but I mean, Ruthie definitely was Scottish at moments, but
the entire that's a great Judge Turpin's house that is. That, like, mm-hmm. It was a full-on Scottish accent.
It was not the most... No accent in the entire show was consistent.
It's also...
And then Jordan Fisher.
Babe,
what are you doing? But it's just like, if you have a Lovett who is making that definite mm-hmm. choice, and for the accent choice that she's making to be that poor and that regional, class is then going to inform the rest of the performance, especially because it's a British thing, and British people are all about, are you working class? What class are you? And especially with a work that is constantly dealing with economics, which this production didn't want to deal with. A show that deals with class differentiation, and she is making a choice where her accent, which is not always accurate, but her accent paints her to be so low-collar, so working class, it has ripple effects. And this is why, where was the director?
I'll toss this out there. The Toronto production that I saw of Sweeney Todd, their Anthony was Irish.
That's fine.
Which I thought was nice. You know, he's a sailor. He travels around the world. Maybe he's not from Britain. Maybe he just likes coming back to Britain. Mm-hmm. That would have been easier for Jordan, I think. I think that would have been an easier accent for him to do.
Yeah.
I wish they... Yeah.
You needed several people in the room. You needed an accent coach giving notes. You needed a vocal coach helping these people. You needed a director giving actual direction.
So many
drop balls.
And basically what this all comes to, and this is exclusively what it all comes to, this is hardly even a debate. What this all comes down to at the end of the day is the reason this production exists. Is the reason this production is on Broadway, is the reason why we are seeing this production, why it happened. Josh Groban wanted to play Sweeney Todd. Sure, power to him. Absolutely power to him. He cares so much about Stephen Sondheim, and he cares so much about musical theater, and he cares so much about Sweeney Todd the musical. And I admire that for him. And I am extremely appreciative for his desire to get this musical on Broadway. If he wants to be in it, express that passion, sure. Okay. Yeah, okay. Like, prove your mettle, but sure. All the power to you. What happens is the same thing that happened with the fucking Music Man.
This is the Music Man. This is absolutely the Music Man 100% this year's Music Man.
Where everyone in the room is operating under the pretense, whether they're there, the people in the Music Man were not there because, oh yeah, we're gonna help give Hugh Jackman his show. Those people wanted to do the Music Man. These people in Sweeney Todd wanted to do Sweeney Todd. The reason that everyone is in that room doing Sweeney Todd is because Josh Groban wanted to do Sweeney Todd. And if Josh Groban is happy about doing Sweeney Todd, that's what people are concentrating on. And no one is focused on trying to give this production any kind of medal, or trying to medal with two T's, metal. And no one's trying to give this perspective or give this thought or try to actually say something about this show or try to have an interesting production of Sweeney Todd. They just want to let Groban play the part. That's entirely what this is about.
It's very much a symptom that I have felt for a long time of an anti-intellectual Broadway, where we now have internet communities and we have teenagers. And I'm happy the teenagers love musical theater. They're able to find each other, and they're able to love all kinds of shows, including some real trash shows. So a taste level is never developed with the actual populace. Taste level is never developed. It never grows. And so then you're dealing with shows that deal with everything on a very surface level, and they don't have much to say, and they don't really make a stance, but you love the people in it, and you love everything you go see, and you got the star you wanted. You love theater, but you don't love it enough to actually intellectually engage with it. And this production very much feels in line with a lot of people are going to walk out of this happy for some reason. They didn't have to try to make this good for that to happen. And I have a huge, on a humanistic level, I have a huge problem with that.
With that, what's next? Is it performers? Is there anything else that you want to get to before we talk about the performers?
I don't want to talk about the merch like you did.
Well, I'm trying to be positive here. You want to talk about Pacific Overtures?
I haven't seen Pacific Overtures.
Yeah, me neither.
Is it the signature?
Well, next time then. All right, performers. Let's start bottom up. Who's first? Is it John Rapson as Beetle Bamford?
Sure.
You saw him before, didn't you?
I have seen him. I saw him twice. He was in the Barrow Street Pie Shop production, and I liked him there. And congrats, he's giving the best performance in this cast. Because
maybe
he walked in with those choices from the previous production.
He is the Sweeney veteran.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, possibly. I love John Rapson. I kind of love... He's one of my favorite sort of not hugely on the front line mainstream Broadway performers.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved him since I was in my sort of Les Mis era phase. And I've loved him ever since... I'm flicking you until you stop. I have the power to do this now. I have the power to do this. Oh, God. Oh, no, he's doing Sweeney interpretive dancing. The shoulders.
We had to talk about the choreography.
Oh, that's right.
God, we had to talk about the choreography.
Okay, no.
Okay, really quick, we have to do that.
Yeah. No. Okay, so there's impressionistic sort of abstract choreography that's happening all over the place. It's the choreographer...
Once?
Yeah. Stephen... Hodgett. Stephen Hodgett. It's so weird. I couldn't explain to you what it's going for. Do you have a sense?
Nope.
Flipping through the program.
No, I have no sense. It's just stupid.
Stephen Hodgett. Credits include Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I saw that in there. I saw his Harry Potter work in Sweeney. For sure.
They dance a lot in this production.
Uh-huh.
And there does not need to be dancing in Sweeney Todd.
No.
Flat out, there does not need to be dancing. There needs to be musical staging. And you can do interesting musical staging. Actual outright dance... You started the show with me laughing. I actually, like, started outright laughing when they started doing the shoulder bump. They do, like, a body roll. The men do a body roll. And it's bizarre. It's bizarre. There's so much dance where it just doesn't need to be there.
I can get behind it. The production I saw in Toronto had choreography. It was well used because it was actually... giving space. It was actually sort of creating the space around it. Because they were performing in a church, there wasn't really like a space that you really had to, you couldn't really like build a set or anything, so mm-hmm. that established a lot of the sort of visual tone. And for what I'm like, where I stand, I go, okay, say something with it or don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a production of Sweeney Todd that said something with its choreography and had a very specific aesthetic and had a very specific sort of motif.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't have that. There was no motif to this choreography.
No,
it was just move. It was just movement.
It was busy movement for the sake of busy movement.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's busy and it's unattractive.
I was really upset with like the one-person ballet for the first half of Poor Thing. I was really upset by that.
Yeah.
Especially like the entire... there were these two, you see, one of them like man, one of them a judge, the other one is Beetle. And there was no, and it was just her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, were there two? Where? Show to me.
The choreography, of course, like a lot of modern choreography, got way too realistic at times. Like, they said Sweeney Todd, and they did a motion where they cut across the neck.
Oh, I remember
okay,
that.
We
that
get
was
the...
so annoying.
Yeah.
I literalized.
Why are we... We're abstract, but then we aren't enough of a mind to actually be abstract, so we have to go back to literalism.
Yeah.
The choreography weakened the production severely.
Sure. All that to say, John Rapson, great.
John Rapson, great, yeah.
Moving on, Nicholas Christopher as Pirelli. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him very much.
He was entertaining to watch. He's not a voice that should be singing Pirelli. Pirelli is a countertenor. He is not. He just screamed out the high notes in a way that...
Yeah.
Yeah, that I don't know if you're going to have a voice 6 months into this.
Especially with the fact that he is the standby for Sweeney Todd.
He's the understudy.
Is he the understudy or is he...
They credit him as a standby, but here is the thing. A standby is a specific position where you are backstage and not on stage during the show. If you are on stage during the show and you cover a role, then you are an understudy. So I don't care if they credit him as a standby. The fact that he has an actual normal role he plays...
Not even just
means
a normal...
that he is not a standby.
Not even just a normal role, a principal.
Yeah.
Arguably. He is a, mm-hmm. he is a titled character. He is not just like an indie ensemble. He is a full character. He is not the bottom bill.
No.
Which is crazy. Not the crazy that he's not the bottom bill. I mean, like, crazy, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Gina DeWall.
Standby, not on.
I know, I don't know. Ruthie Ann Miles.
Ruthie Ann Miles was...
seemed like she would have been great with a director.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She had the right impulses.
Yeah.
She's the person that actually sang the right notes all night.
Yeah, great voice. But even then, there were so many moments where it felt like she was so restrained. Like, fucking...
Well, and that's the... that goes back to
being... Beetle, get her, but quickly. She's a wicked one.
I feel...
you. It was just pushed back.
I feel bad for all these people because they just have nothing to work with.
Yeah.
They are each not living up to their potential, so they can't start feeding off of each other. Mm-hmm. And where was the director to get someone fully living up to their potential?
Yeah. Yeah. Ruthie Ann Miles is, like, known as one of the most wonderful actresses working in the musical theater today.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
And she's good here, but is she everything she could be? No.
No. No, she's unfortunately...
No one is everything which I don't,
which I couldn't blame her for.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find it in my heart to.
Next, let us go to Maria Bilbao. Bilbao?
Lovely. Charming.
She's the other person that I think was possibly in contention for strongest performance.
Really?
She's, again, straddled with, I only get to occupy like five mm-hmm. square feet of space this entire show on mm-hmm. this stage, and she's especially hampered by who her leading man is,
right.
and the fact that he's really not pulling any of his weight.
Yeah.
She has a good voice. She can act.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see something that's actually good that she's in.
I'd like to see her. I'd like to see her act. I got like just a tiny snippet of that mm-hmm. in her little moment with Josh Groban.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe you'd be good with the director. Like, you know, I thought the performance was fine. I'm interested in her though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess we have to get to him now.
Jamie Jackson.
We could do that.
Okay, let's talk about Jordan Fisher. Let's talk about Jordan Fisher. Jordan Fisher, I don't know. Why was he cast? Is he a sell? Is he a ticket seller? Do you need a ticket seller anymore? Not only do you have Josh Groban to get all the Grobanites in, not only do you have Annalee Ashford to get all the people who will call Meghan Trainor mother in, you have fucking, you know, you have the star of Stranger fucking Things in your show. You don't need any more tickets sold. What is Jordan Fisher doing here? Is he a name?
You know, I saw the performance. I still can't tell you what Jordan Fisher is doing here.
Because you watched the performance, accent, you're like, he couldn't have auditioned.
The accent is so wild. It's the worst accent on stage, and that's a pretty high bar to clear, actually.
Sure, for sure.
It's the worst accent on stage. It is the fact that every time he has a new line that starts or a new phrase that starts, he takes two or three notes to actually figure out what key he is singing in. Every single time he enters, he does not know the pitch. Mm. He is constantly, he's flat or he's sharp. He can't find the key. He takes like 3 or 4 notes and then he's into it. And then he starts, sure, we can call it singing, but there's so little voice there that I don't even know what I'm listening to. And you lose him at several points. I mean, during the Joanna Quartet, didn't really hear him when everyone was singing. A Kiss Me, I definitely did not hear anything he did. Why is he there? And based on his attendance history, maybe he won't be. When you go see it. If you go see it, which don't spend money on it. Don't spend a lot.
I'm glad that you had so much to say about Jordan Fisher. I truly don't have a word for him. He might as well have not been there. That's my stance. Jamie funnily enough,
Jackson.
Really quickly, just like on the subject of Jordan Fisher, the ensemble member that I really, really liked, the one who I was like, people should be following his lead, apparently he just went on for Anthony a couple days ago.
Yeah. He was one of the people that you heard and you were like, okay, this person can sing.
Not this person can sing.
Really?
Not even that. Just this person knows the way to sing Sweeney.
Mm-hmm.
Knows what we want to hear through Sweeney.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy to hear that he's the understudy.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Jamie Jackson.
Jackson as the judge.
Who is this guy?
He was also from the Off-Broadway Barrow Street production.
He? Okay. Yes.
I did not see him.
So they had a camaraderie there. What, did he originate it or?
I don't know if he originated it. I know I saw an understudy.
His
judge
fourth
once.
Sweeney. Wow, he played Sweeney at Gateway. He was an ensemble member at the Bryn Terfel concert, the Lincoln Center. And
we don't know that because it's been at Lincoln Center twice. There have been two different concerts.
What was the other? Oh, maybe he was doing the George Hearn one. Anyhow, he's played the judge before. Yes, Barrow Street Broadway off. Barrow Street. It was fine. It was pretty good.
He had moments that worked. It seemed like, I hate to make this comparison, it did seem like at one point he was probably a fantastic judge, but it's starting to be, he's 3 or 4 years too far into this.
And he's sort of automating the, I get it, where he's
well,
like...
Not even automating, I mean, the low notes were not totally there.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And it's probably also a case of like, hey, having done this in such an intimate space, you're not used to having those notes have to come out in a however many 100-seat Broadway theater.
And finally, before we get to the main two, we have Gaetano Mazzarella.
Nope.
Giuseppe Manchego.
No.
Giovanni Mascarpone.
No.
Gorgonzola Mangliano.
No.
Garibaldi Munster.
No.
Gelato Margarita.
No. No, Daniel.
What?
No.
Get it right. Gaetano Mazzarella, go ahead.
No. You whipped out the goddamn stupid fucking playbill. Read the name.
Gaetano Mazzarella.
No.
Gaetano Mazzarella.
No.
Gaetano Mazzarella.
Gaetan Matarazzo.
Gaetano Mazzarella. I thought that Gaetano was good.
I thought that was maybe one of the best performances on the stage.
He was in contention. It's not the biggest... voice.
These people are fucking, listen to them. They're huge Gaten fans. These people, it's the Gaten Brigade. It's the Brigaten. Shake my hand.
Who's Gaten?
Fuck you. Anyhow, he was very good. You can tell he was the actor in this company.
Yes,
you can
very
so
much.
Tell, which is astounding when the actor in your company is the teenager.
Mm-hmm. I was touched by Not While I'm Around.
I was very touched by Not While I'm Around. I was very touched, honestly, I was touched by his Pirelli's Miracle Elixir. I was like, this is like a chipper little young boy who wants to do well. I was very charmed by him. I was very charmed by his sort of interactions. He had this little moment when Pirelli came to the barbershop where like, Annalee Ashford is coming down. I'm not calling her Mrs. Lovett. When Annalee Ashford comes down the stairs, he's just sort of like hiding himself against the staircase and taking up as little space as possible. Mm-hmm. And I found that absolutely adorable. And the excitement of him getting the, being told that he can have some gin, how he's like stumbling over his words. Oh, Mr. Todd, he said that I thought it was absolutely endearing.
Why did they put him in a Velma wig? I mean, that was a Party City Velma Scooby-Doo wig.
I found it very funny. I liked it. There wasn't any creative oversight. It was definitely, yeah, here's what we can find.
Why were the costumes? Like, there was no dirt. None of these people were done.
Oh, yeah, it was so clean.
Everything was so clean. Everyone
takes baths in this London.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what it is.
He was good.
I will say, the one person who I liked getting dirty at the end of the show was Gaten. Gaten got pretty fucking dirty.
He was the only one.
Yeah, and I was like, I want to see that.
Throughout everywhere. The entire cast, yeah.
No, you know what it was? I wanted to see the end of this show that with the way people were coming out and everyone. I wanted to see everyone gored. Even if they're people that we hadn't like explicitly seen murdered, I want the implication that these are the bodies of Sweeney's victims. I wanted to see everyone come out be completely gored. I thought that would have been a nice, striking visual image. Instead, mm-hmm. You got a couple splashes of paint on the beggar woman. Like... I thought Gaten was fantastic. I would say possibly I think he gives the best performance in this company.
I think that Gaetano is in contention.
He would be in contention if he were in the fucking show.
He brought the mozzarella.
You looked at me so earnestly when you said that. Your eyebrows were in such a genuine place. That was too much for me. It was too earnest. Anyhow, Annalee Ashford. You have to do it. I can't start.
Okay. So you know how we said that Sweeney Todd has to be discomforting?
Mm-hmm.
Was this production?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it discomforting in the way it should have been discomforting?
No.
Okay. Was there suspense?
No. 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 No.
And that's the thing. The tone is constantly wrong. There is zero suspense anywhere.
No.
It's just kind of happening. The reason that there is zero suspense is because of Annalee Ashford, who gives the hammiest performance I have ever seen in my life. I say that as a massive Carol Channing fan.
I didn't think it was as hammy. Well, fair. I didn't think it was as hammy as I had been led to believe it was. I was expecting a full-on, like... 1920s musical comedy performance. Instead, it was just that Annalee Ashford was just like inherently shticky, and not in like over the top, always shtick. Though there were some obscene attention stealing gimmicks just for the sake of gimmicking. She does the fucking Three Stooges sort of circle on the ground. The fucking. In the middle of a little priest and dedicates 45 seconds to it. I was angered by that.
That was disgusting.
There's a whole gag of her like falling down the stairs at one point. It mm-hmm. starts with her like Worst Pies in London in like the first verse has her full body lunging on the floor at one point, just complete mm-hmm. pratfalling. Aside from like moments of that, which happened like 5 minutes apart from each other each time.
It happened more often than that because you're not forgetting how much, okay, well, I'm going to be flirting with Sweeney Todd, which is fine. That's part of the show. But she's, like, going after this guy in a way that's honestly uncomfortable. I mean, yeah. By the Sea, which I thought overall she did well, By the Sea, the middle of it, she had her leg over his shoulder, like, and look at me, Fanny, look at me, Fanny.
That one was the first one that I actually kind of, like, got, because she had that moment of, I can't remember what the exact lyric is. Like, oh, unless you got better to do. She's, like, trying to do this thing to entice from afar.
She's touching him so much the entire show.
I'm uncomfortable with it all around. But she's doing this thing to, like, entice him from afar and trying to get an interaction. And it's, like, some kind of reaction. And he goes, anything you say. That was my Josh Groban impression. Anything and just not paying attention, so she just like goes up to him and tries to get the reaction very physically. And I watched that, I was like, okay, I've heard so much about like the obscenity of the over the topness of that thing, but I watched it and I went, okay, well, at least it's motivated. At least there's like something. It's not just random goofiness. It's like, okay, I can see the build. Sure.
The issue is, she is so hammy. She's so going for all the jokes. And she sets it up from the second she goes on stage. The audience is never able to turn it off. I mean, there's moments that should not be getting laughs where she's going for a joke. And yeah, so then you get to other serious moments in the show.
And people are laughing because they imagine.
The audience is laughing because you set the expectation. I mean, she's actually partially going for a laugh in the lead up to Epiphany.
Yes.
To Epiphany.
What's all this running and shouting? Yeah.
What's so
way to not deflate the balloon, but to take a fucking needle to it. Pop the balloon.
To take the most aggressive needle to it. She is. There are moments that she sings well. There are moments that she acts well.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall effect is that she is the reason this production is bad.
Yeah.
She is flat out the reason the production is bad, and it ultimately becomes the director's fault, because where was he to rein her in? There's an overlying issue that he's not there. He's not there to rein her in at all. And that's why it is ultimately his fault, but she originates the problem.
Mm-hmm. And with that, Groban, here I can start. Very akin to Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say is that
she was akin to Sutton Foster in that they're not interested in playing the role.
They're interested in being on set.
They're interested in being loved by the audience.
Sutton and Annerly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Hugh and Josh is that they are so extraordinarily glad to be on Broadway performing the show they're in.
Mm.
And that was something that was very, very clear from Josh Groban's performance. I'm going to say right at the top a difference between the two of us. I really enjoy Josh Groban's performance in Great Comet. I really do enjoy that performance from him. And I still enjoy
that
performance.
I don't know how I feel about him. I didn't watch him.
All right, fair enough. I've seen videos of him. I'm a big fan of the cast recording. I listen to it often. I really enjoy his performance in that show. I like him as a performer. And watching him in Sweeney and watching him as Sweeney, the thing that I was getting away from it was, okay, I can tell that he wanted to make this good. I can absolutely tell that he wanted to make this good. With Hugh, I said, okay, he's trying. He's trying to the absolute depth of his ability. I won't exactly say that with Groban, but I can see the desire. I can absolutely see the desire to want to be good. It's just that Groban is kind of... no one told him when he's just Grobaning.
Yeah. I have a checkered history with Josh Groban.
For some fucking reason.
I have a checkered history with Josh Groban. We will not go into it.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting to outright hate him here. I will be upfront with that. He was fine.
Mm.
He was fine, which I was not expecting. He is not the problem.
He's not the problem. He just isn't a solution.
No, he's not a solution. He sang in many ways better than I expected.
Yeah.
But he is not a baritone.
Mm.
He is more baritonal now than he once was. But in classical circles that I've been in, they've repeatedly referred to him as a tenor without a top. And that's what he is.
Yeah.
He's a tenor without a top. You especially hear it, and one of the moments that actually got a laugh from me, it was not Annaleigh Ashford, but it's the Joanna Quintet, where Jordan Fisher, Joanna, and
Joanna,
he matched him, Joanna.
Oh yeah.
And Groban matched Jordan Fisher, and you're like, okay, Groban has the tenor voice that should be singing that song. That's the note I've been wanting to hear out of Fisher.
Oh man, you know what? Groban Anthony in like the 2000s might have been something.
He screen tested for the movie.
Did he?
He did.
Interesting.
Him and Anne Hathaway.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
He sang it better than I thought, but he doesn't have the low notes.
Not really.
Let's not kid ourselves. You know what's crazy?
And who may it be said is your intended, sir?
Neither of them.
He estimates. He does not sing that. He estimates it. It comes out close-ish, but he can't actually sing that.
Yeah.
I can't actually sing that. I'll cop to
and
that.
And who may it be said is your intended,
you
sir?
You can't actually
yes,
sing
yes,
that.
Yes, I just sang it perfectly.
And who
that
may it be said is your intended, sir? My ward.
My ward.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not there.
Yep.
He flat out cannot sing part of the role. He sings better than I expected. He sounds fine. He's not an actor. He's not an actor in any way, shape, or form. But he tried. I appreciated him trying. He seemed right-hearted and in the right instincts when he tried, which was constantly. The issue is, he does have star quality. I will give him that. He does have a certain amount of star quality, and he walks on stage, and you feel that star quality. Think back to the hours when Kelly O'Hara walked on stage and changed the entire mood of that room. Groban is able to bring star quality. He's not able to move the energy in any single way.
If I can jump back to your baritone comment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's crazy? We saw two musicals today. One led by Josh Groban, one led by Ben Platt. Guess which one had the more solid
low voice?
Yeah.
It was Ben Platt.
Who the fuck would have thought? Mr. A sharp 4. Anyhow.
It's printed as a B flat.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense with the... Yeah. Anyhow. Josh Groban really wanted to make something work here, and the passion comes through. The passion and the enjoyment comes through.
I appreciated
that
he tried. He's fine. If you like Josh Groban, you're going to love him in this, although he's not very good. I do harp on the baritone thing, though, because we sat here in 2001 when Sweeney Todd was at the Kennedy Center, and Brian Stokes Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
of all people, got a slew of reviews that said he did not have the Sweeney Todd death rattle because he is not a bass enough. And we are now sitting here with Josh Groban, and
giving
everyone
him
is sitting around talking about how good he sounds. He does sound good in general. He does not have a Sweeney Todd voice.
Mm-hmm.
He has a... Somewhere in that show, he has a voice, but not as Sweeney Todd.
I would be so curious to see if they even entertain the idea of having Sweeney Todd go on beyond Groban. Because if they do, I think there's a chance.
It gets better?
There's a chance of Little Night Music, where a new cast comes in and they just overhaul it themselves, and so they give it a consistency.
I mean, without Annalee actually actively harpooning the production, which is what she does.
Yeah.
Without her harpooning it, he would have been fine if it was Better Love It. He honestly might have started to seem disappointing. I'm not
and
sure.
And I even think...
But if you get two solid people in those leads...
Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
I also think...
I'd go back to see it.
And I think Groban is a... good performer and someone who's very passionate about the caring of Sweeney. I think even if you pair Annalee with less of a placebo actor, because Groban is kind of a placebo actor. He's a good vocalist, good performer, not an actor.
It doesn't matter because you needed a director in that room to reel her in.
But I think if you get like a non-placebo actor opposite Ashford, you have someone there for to actually push back against her and to give
ground
her a different energy and to... Like, yeah, to ground her, to push her in a different direction,
mm-hmm.
to go, this is what I'm bringing, please flex to me as well. And I think that could have been effective. But here, Groban is like tofu, you know? And you're just sort of...
You have to add seasoning.
That's it. Anyhow. Overall, it's a letdown company with some shining spots.
It's a letdown product. It has to be stated again. I have never in my life seen a musical that is that poorly directed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm discontented.
So, the production... Again, it's Sweeney Todd, and it's nice to see Sweeney Todd. So I did not find it painful.
Mm-hmm.
But it is constantly disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not happy with it. I'm really upset by this production. I'm really upset by the lack of attention, by the lack of care, by the lackadaisical nature of it altogether. I'm really upset by all the wasted potential.
Wasted potential, and you're tying up Sweeney probably for 20 years now. And this is what we got. We got these two.
2001, 2006, a movie in 2008, 2014, off-Broadway 2017, on-Broadway 2023. This is the sixth time that Sweeney Todd has been big in New York in the past two decades, in the 21st century. Fucking people are going to be reviewing this production negatively, and their thing is going to be, maybe this is the sign that we just need to stop putting Sweeney on in New York City. Which is sad. Which is sad that I think that that's an argument people are going to use.
It should have been Audra McDonald and Lea Delaria, because Audra McDonald has been very upfront about
wanting to play Sweeney Todd.
A dream role being Sweeney Todd and Sweeney Todd. It should have been Audra McDonald and Lea Delaria, and they should have pulled a Little Foxes with Cynthia Nixon and Laura Linney, where they switch roles every night.
Interesting. I like that. That'd be cool.
That's what we deserved.
I'd be curious to see how that would work out.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd be able to pick the same keys, but...
True. Anyhow. Love you, Stephen Sondheim. Sorry about this.
This is not... If you go... We were in the last couple rows. It's fine back there. If you've been in a touring house, you've been in bigger. Go for the last couple rows. We spent 80. I would not spend more than that.
It's 80 with fees. 80 with fees. 80 with fees. If you can get there to the box office, truly, I wouldn't recommend. I'm the kind of person who's like, my bar for entry is 60. For 60 bucks, I'll go see a show. For 60 bucks, you should see Sweeney Todd, or as close to 60 as you can humanly get. Do not pay triple digits.
Do not pay $300. Just don't. Do not.
Well, that's our review of Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Now I'm
Isn't it exciting that we got this out on time with all the other
critics?
This
is fun. Look at us. This is us trying to make peace with the more mainstream, those sorry folks over there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming out. If you're new to the podcast, hope you enjoy us. We're going to be talking about Showboat next week. We talk about musicals every other week here. We talk about theater.
We're late on Showboat.
Yeah. Why not?
We're late, but we'll get it up.
We will. We promise. It's coming up. It's almost there.
All right. Well, it's 1:30 in the morning, and that's our episode.
We learn audience to say goodbye.
Don't see it expensively.